What just happened in the middle? It's Saturday, April 5th. I'm at the RCC for a speak out. It's part of the Reproductive Rights Conference.
Sex education. They're trying to shut down my organization, Planned Parenthood, CGIS, because of the work we do lobbying against Alzheimer's disease programs. These are our times. So I'm here and I hope that I'm going to get reinvigorated and re-energized, and Radical Shooter definitely helped with that. I need it right now. Abstinence-only until marriage programs are a pro-choice issue. Fighting for sex education is a pro-choice issue. When you talk about those people, you have to talk about sex education in that same breath. I work with a lot of young sisters and advocates, and they're fighting for sex education, but they don't consider themselves pro-choice. Why? And it's not. But that's our responsibility. We have got to change our messaging. We have got to learn about all of the issues. You know, under Reagan, abstinence public school teachers, only about 8% of public school teachers were teaching abstinence-only until marriage programs. Right now in America, in public schools, only 25% of teachers are teaching abstinence-only until marriage programs. So why is this so bad? I mean, people are like, it's not easy about it, is it? These programs not only teach false information about HIV/AIDS, that people with AIDS are sinners, that we should not feel sorry for them, that we should not help them. They also teach that questioning your sexuality is not normal, that being homosexual, being a lesbian, being a gay, men who have sex with men, those people are all going to hell. These programs are faith-based in the wrong way. I am a person of faith, very strongly, and so I really like the comment that somebody said about using our faith, because I believe that's true. But these programs are based on a conservatism that is very dangerous in this country, a conservatism that is driving our war, that is endangering our rights as women and as men, and we have to watch what is happening. Because these sexuality education, if our young girls are not learning how to protect themselves, are not learning the skills that they need to negotiate, then you know what? What's the point of even having the option to abortion? I was at a conference that a couple back in September with Sister Abby down there, and I think Latifa, I haven't actually seen her, is she here? She got delayed. And there was this announcement that, hey, 40 million women in America, may have said that statistic, had abortions. Everybody started clapping. And I was just proud of that. That's not something I'm proud of. I want to know, how many abortions can we prevent? Ask yourself, how many? When I was in high school in Fairfield, Connecticut, I worked on peer education programs. I was home a couple of months ago, and they were talking about teen pregnancy in high schools in Connecticut declining. And I was talking to my mentor, and he goes, yeah, now we're going to worry about the middle schools. Since I came to college, the rise is in middle schools. And so when they say teen pregnancy rates are declining, look at those rates. Look, when they say teenage pregnancy, what about the girls who aren't teenagers? I want to close with asking all the mentors out here, all the women who've been fighting this for a long time, do you have women, younger women, who you are taking under your wings, who you are investing in, who you believe in? I work in an organization that believes in the power of young people, that believes in putting us at the that when the executive director is asked to go speak at a press conference, he sends me. And that's what our movement is missing. Our movement is missing young women at the forefront. Young women of color, young women of all diversities, and that's what we need to demand of our organization, of these women's organizations that are fighting for this movement. Put us in the front. Because when you put us in the front, other young women will listen. And that's what we need. We need more young women. We need more young women. Thank you.
Our next speaker is actually a Hampshire alum. So she's also an OBGYN resident and a resident in the town and also the country. So we welcome back to Hampshire. Abundance.
that people don't want more people like me in the world. Not just me, it's not personal to me, but they just don't want more people with disabilities in the world. So, you know, I had the experience of having a doctor that just forced me to take that book there. And I said, well, I don't want that. I said, it's not a choice. I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it. It didn't pass the FDA the first time. It was tested on women around the world, and I don't want it. And if you want it so much, then you can take the shot. And I said, which someone would that be? You know, and so I think that the pain of knowing that when people see me or people like me, they assume that we're going to pass on something hereditary to our children, and that those children will then be as devalued as we will be, and will be this group of burden. And so I want you guys to give up the burden of your mouth. Get over it. It's going to go away. You're not going to be with that. Everybody's present. Welcome the experience, the possibility that you're going to also be a person with this one. And we don't have to evaluate. And if we have children, you know, so many of the school classes that speak out were actually about how people felt lonely and isolated and how they didn't receive support from the community. And I have to tell you, as a person who's considered very much having children, I'm so scared of that, because if I ever say, God, you know, I'm having a bad day, and I just, could you just take this person for 20 minutes so I can be with myself? If somebody else did that, that would be understandable. If I did that, that would be child support. And my custody would not be honored. People with disabilities who do not have children get custody taken away for the most petty, petty things. And so I guess what I want to say is informed choice. If a woman is choosing to abort a child because she's never met a person with a disability, and disability is the worst possible outcome for a pregnancy, you know, we don't care if it's a boy or a girl, even though we know people care if it's a girl now, but we don't care if it's a boy or a girl as long as it's healthy. I was speaking as one of those people who didn't come out in this cave. I'm not healthy, and I'm still here. And so I hope that there will be more unhealthy people born in the world. I hope that we can find a way to welcome the lumpy and the bumpy, the awkward, the people, you know, the people who give us the original fright. I hope the world becomes a big freak show.
$5.15 per hour for 8 hours a day.
5, 15 per hour for 40 hours each week. Human labor in badass apparel paid for 5, 15 an hour. Excuse me, the correct term is minimum wage. Fathers are expected to use 5, 15 an hour to cover up for their families. Mothers should be able to take care of their children with 5, 15 an hour. Children are expected to be housed, clothed, and fed with 5, 15 an hour. An adult with no children ought to be happy having a job and with 5, 15 an hour. What the fuck is 5:15 an hour? 5:15 to 8 hours is $41.20 a day, $206 per week, $412 every 2. That's gross pay. You gotta pay the government for letting you make 5:15. The pay you'll take home is roughly $315. 5:15 an hour might buy a pot to piss in, but not a proper window to pour it out. 5:15 an hour may get your ass on the bus, but it barely covers a transfer. 5:15 an hour might get you some easy credit for cheap furniture, but it'll also put your ass in debt trying to pay it off. Stretching 5:15 an hour to buy groceries, but you damn sure be eating generic. 5:15 an hour means your ass is poorer than the federal poverty line. 5:15 an hour means you pay 31% less than a minimum wage worker did in 1968. Now that's the shit. Usually folks like to be kissed before they're screwed, but as usual, the powers that be are only shooting their regular. Since slavery is illegal, minimum wage makes the portion of sweeping them in, give them here, and all for 5:15 an hour. But don't forget to say that. A productive member of society, you're free from unemployment, but still change problem. Asshole, you know that yet again they ran you through the proverbial harbor. Could someone please tell me what the fuck is 5:15?
I could not make enough to nourish them, and the charity scraps are too few.
How dare you? Can you lactate? When babies cry at 2 a.m. to suckle the breast, where are you? Got it? No, I didn't. Thank you for that. To bring forth them as a child in a loving, caring, and nurturing environment. I am not kidding. Judging by the unequal distribution of this country's wealth and resources. Welfare reform, environmental racism and degradation, economic overconsumption, capitalism, white male colonization are the enemies you must call out of that name. Where have you been as I fought the hard fight to maintain my reproductive integrity? My warrior marks Elizabeth. Years of battle to hold on to my ovaries, my tubes, my uterus. I've done battle alongside my other sisters of color to stop injections of their hormones that render us unable to bring forth the life of flame to protect, to cherish. Where were you, my brother, when doctors were still in my womb in Mississippi, all under the guise of an acting veteran? Why didn't you help to find a good doctor to save me when I died again and again from co-painters, knitting needles, and chemical mixtures, trying to stop a pregnancy that I knew in my heart of hearts and souls of souls I wasn't mentally, physically, emotionally, or financially prepared to continue? Or did you think I deserved to die? But you didn't conspicuously ask. Absent because you have no needs, and you can't really understand what it means to be a woman. To be a black woman, being a black woman on the margins. On the margins of the so-called reproductive health movement that is, in reality, all about me and all my sisters of color. A movement filled with white men and white women making social and health policies that dictate how and when I can reproduce or not. Sisters kick down doors to sit at the table, but you're not there. Nor do you help us kick the doors down. Don't you see, if I cannot be self-determining as a black woman, then you cannot be self-determining as a people. You should be standing in solidarity with me in my decisions. Never mind your youth. You don't know the weight of my experiences. Have you ever been 12 and pregnant? Raped and pregnant? Poor and pregnant? The doctor said the baby is sick and will die, pregnant. 17, but it was an accident. And oh my God, apparently I just got a scholarship and I want to be something. When I grow up, pregnant. Pregnant, and you know you have to be mommy and dad because daddy's already gone. You have no clue about my life, my choices, my decisions, how it feels to be a woman, to be a black woman, being a black woman on the margins, being a black woman on the margins and pregnant, because you've never had a baby.
Years.
the religious right, the disorders have been very effective at using pregnant drug addicted women and drug exposed children to justify increasing and uplifting the right to fetuses in this country. In South Carolina, where I'm originally from, where I'm from, after 24 weeks of pregnancy in South Carolina, the fetus is considered a person and has the rights that a born child would have, meaning they have the protection of the Department of Social Services. So that anything that a pregnant woman does after 24 weeks of pregnancy can be considered child abuse. We have a woman right now who's still in prison. I talked about her last year. Her name is Virginia McKnight. She's in jail for homicide by child, prison for homicide by child abuse. And we have been fighting to get that appeal in court, but it just hasn't happened yet. We lost her appeal just recently. And it looks like she may end up spending, her prison sentence in totally real time. Although we are going to appeal to the Supreme Court and do all that stuff or whatever, but that's a battle that's really caught up in the legal system. So, I also do a lot of other kinds of work, and I don't really want to, not that my work is boring, but a little bit, I really want to talk more about the expansion of reproductive rights, whatever that word means, informed right, and we know what it means in a lot of people's minds, is very limited, and that their reproductive rights, when I think about it, the work that I've been doing, which is just all over the place, it seems like, and that there's this common thread through it. Reproductive rights is about, right? Who can have a kid? Where can you have a kid? How can you have a kid? Can you have a kid? Do you want to have, do you want to not, do you not want to have a kid? Is that okay? And who gets to decide what's okay for who? And it seems to me that the lighter the skin color, the more money you have, the more freedom that you have to make those kind of decisions. And that's not okay. That's okay. That's just not okay. What does that have to do with anything? I didn't receive any special training as a white woman, I have to tell you. That would make me any better mother or anything like that. That's not an inbred quality, although that seems to be what a lot of people think. I also want to say, tell you a little bit about who I am. You're looking at a woman who is a recovering alcoholic, who's had an abortion, who is recovering from bulimia, who has a lot of different in and out mental breakdowns. And the reason that I say that, and it's important that you see me saying that, is because when you see that on TV, those people do not look like me. When we see people on the street, those people are me, but they do not look like me. And the biggest difference between us was my parents' middle class status and my skin color, and that's it. And that is not okay. A lot of times when I'm advocating for people, my life is so different from the clients that I work with. And yet our histories, our family craziness, the insanity, the drug dealing, the absolute terror and horror that drug addiction can bring in on family, I am with those women. But when you look at us and hear the way we talk and the way we speak, I've been educated to talk like a certain kind of person and walk like a certain kind of person. And we look very different. One of the things I've really come up against lately is when I talk about empowering women, I am not talking about teaching women how to act like white people. Okay, and that's what a lot of empowerment. I'm not talking about people who don't speak right, teaching them how to speak right. That's not what I'm talking about. One day, I don't want to be able to have this job. Okay, I love my work, but I one day want to live in the world. We don't need people like me to come on and speak for other people like me because they can speak for themselves and be heard. That's the world that I want to live in. Not a world where I get paid to be able to speak for other people. And I'm very conscious of that. And not so much so that I can't do my work, but I am very clear that I make money off of the backs of poor, predominantly black and brown women who are drug addicted. And I'm just going to put that out there because, a lot of times people don't want to talk about that kind of stuff. And I'm very aware of that, and I'm not okay with it. And so what I decided to do is to acknowledge it and to try to get people, maybe we can have some different folks. And as I get older, I'm 32 now, I'm going to be 33, and more and more, it's like I'm not a young person. I want to support people coming to the front. I get tired of hearing myself talk. I talk all the time. Somebody else wants to get up here and talk about it, And another thing I want to say, too, that I think is really critical right now, is that I really don't want you to listen to anything I just said, okay? I really want you to think for yourself, and I don't want you to be influenced if you think I'm, and you may not, I'm just going to go along the tangent here, that I'm entertaining, therefore I know what I'm talking about, that I'm cute, therefore I know what I'm talking about. Any of those things, but people, we really are being led. We live in a culture where we follow leaders because they know how to speak, not because they teach us to think. We live in a place where we follow people because they're good looking, because they're skinny, because they got the microphone. Please, especially in this time, start to think for yourself. Question everything that comes out of everybody's mouth about anything. Do not trust that. And I don't mean run around and scared, don't trust people, and don't love people. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about what I don't see a lot of, and I'm talking about, I'm not saying the young people, and all people. It's critical thinking. Please think for yourself. Don't be inspired and say, you know, oh, that speaker was so great, you know, I want to do what they do. That speaker was so great, and I can do it too. And forget that speaker. I'm going to do it myself. I'm not interested in leading people who want to follow. I'm interested in leading people who want to lead. And there's a weird thing how can we all be leaders? Well, we can be. We absolutely can be. So I'm really excited to be here. I love this conference. This young people. I can't even say that. To see people who care about this issue and who are excited about this issue and that we are going to be doing something. And you guys are the future. You know, you're the future, you're the present. And I'm really excited. I love all of you. Thank you.
Our next speaker has come from Kampala, and it's just been included that she works for ISIS Women's International Cross Cultural Exchange. She works on human rights issues and peace building. So please welcome Jessica. Human rights to be able to find sustainable solutions.
live in that region. And therefore, the issues of human rights and women's human rights, they tend to make it like the river of life, more so sexual and reproductive health and rights. So, coming from a women's human rights organization, and a human rights activist from the time I was quite young, I don't run an income generating project. I don't provide direct medical treatment for women. Therefore, when we talk, we look at that as very useful. But more and more, our society is managing to realize that unless the human rights of all, unless human rights are promoted, protected, and respected, women will not have the power and the confidence and the assertiveness to negotiate for safe sex, to choose when, who, to have sex with, to negotiate how many children to have, to choose whether or not to have children, and with whom. So we continue to promote human rights, because when women don't know, that is the worst that can happen. Because they get taken advantage of, culture takes advantage of us, religion takes advantage of us, poverty takes advantage of us. Therefore, we realize also that when this is peace in a country and in the region, and now in the world, the rights of all of us are going to be safe. Because I'm sure you are beginning to realize even here that when there's talk of war, certain rights begin to be taken away. And when it continues and continues, we continue to lose more rights. And if we don't speak out from the very beginning, at the end of the day, there will be no one to speak for us. Where it comes from, we feel sickened by the rhetoric that cynically promotes the human rights of women when it fits the leaders. And then recently we began to see even bigger leaders talking about the human rights of women from Afghanistan, the human rights of women in Iraq. Now, the human rights of women all this time have been trampled on, and it didn't happen to be working. Why are they talking now? Therefore, as a woman from Uganda, as a woman from a country that is poor, third world, but the country that has a population that is against this war, and a leader who has chosen to align himself with a coalition of the willing, I don't understand how. I would like to align myself to the energy in this room, and to thank you all for being here, for being for the things that I believe in, that our organization believes in. And I would like to say, in 2004, let's go out and choose leaders that are going to advocate for these issues. Because unless we are in these leadership positions, we'll talk and we'll talk and we won't be able to go anywhere, and these leaders are going to get advantage of us. Thank you very much.
Our next speaker is actually she's a teacher, a researcher in women's health, and the founder of the Palestinian Arab Women's Council of Israel. So please welcome the Tanya Clark.
One of the people told me, you are lucky because you are taking a very good care of you. trying to convince me that this is for my own sake. Okay, so I'm really happy to lend my voice to all of the voices of you women from two different nationalities all over the world. I'm not feeling lonely. Yes, I don't feel alone. I feel like a soldier on this planet for human rights and for reproductive rights. So the issue of reproductive rights is relatively a new concept used in the Palestinian and Arab world countries. However, it is not strange for the Muslim religion. That book that aims at bringing social justice to people, when it started in the 14th century. The Islam based on the Quran, to let women equally to men. In many issues. However, some issues are not updated to our current society. And the Sharia people are responsible for translating these issues and updating them to the current reality. And there are actually two main streams that are on the seat of Sharia. One stream is more specific, and it's forbidding contraceptions and abortions. And I'm happy to say that they are now being more and more small group. The other group is more liberal group. And this group actually is banning the use of contraception in order to prevent unwanted abortions. And many of them are located in Egypt and in Asia, and it affects a lot the Muslim society worldwide. I'm really more happy also to have more voices of Arab women in the international conferences, because I think that Arab women should join this voice. We have also the double struggle of being, you know, a woman fighting for the rights of women, but also for civil.
Sex people are often discriminated against in employment and in other areas if their new sex condition becomes known. I'd like to pull to an end here. Reiterate that I'm very pleased to be here and finish with the ideas that in order to build a movement for social justice, it's of paramount importance that we build alliances. Women's rights are human rights, gay rights are human rights, the rights of people of color are human rights, trans rights are human rights, intersex rights are human rights, all of our rights are in fact human rights. Thank you. Is Dana Jin Paredes, and she is a queer Chinese Chicano organizer with a group called Asian and Pacific Islanders for Reproductive Health.
Controlling and violent, and every process that comes for that, so I understand the stuff.
But we don't have an answer. But what we have learned is that fundamentally we must be open to looking broadly at how these systems of oppression intersect. The definition we use up here for reproductive freedom is that we believe women have true reproductive freedom when they have the economic, social, and political power and resources to make empowered decisions that protect the reproductive health and well-being of themselves and their families in all areas of life. How does this definition help us identify issues to work on? Well, it has meant that we work on a range of issues that are members identify as critical places in which they are experiencing oppression. For example, one, we have worked on issues of sexual harassment in schools, harassment being a form of violence. We saw this as an opportunity to show that API girls are not the weak and weird stereotype, but are empowered and strong young women. Two, English and environmental justice groups to shut down a medical waste incinerator residing in the residential area of East Oakland, where there are high concentrations of API families being exposed to health toxins such as dioxin. Dioxins interfere with the function of the immune system and, among other things, can cause endometriosis, which is a leading cause of infertility in women. Three, we have engaged in efforts to demand greater access to health care and welfare by calling for language access and cultural competency to address the needs of the incredibly diverse API community, most of whom are in need, who are poor, and who have come to the U.S. for a myriad of reasons like family unification, labor or sex trafficking, economic crisis in their countries of origin, war, and other forms of state violence. Four, we have also been recently engaged in a research project which showed that Southeast Asian young women have one of the highest rates of teen pregnancy in the country. One of the main factors identified by our members was the lack of comprehensive sexuality education. And before coming to appear, our members had never participated or were encouraged to talk openly about questions and concerns regarding sexuality. Currently, we are working with the ACLU to conduct research to document the presence of sex education throughout all California public school districts. These are just a few examples of how we have addressed health and reproductive issues that impact API women and girls in this society. In 2003, we are building from these accomplishments and are moving towards working partnerships that strategically engage issues and organizations that work on welfare, environmental justice, domestic violence, immigrant and refugee rights, and particularly the prison industrial complex, as we face an astounding expansion of state control, which actively seeks opportunities to broaden the definition of what we think of as criminal. These intersections are important because they create an opportunity to share the depth of the API experience as women and girls, as immigrants and refugees, as poor, as undocumented, as not knowing English, as young, as having never gone to school, and
it's my dream just to live out of fear. It's my dream to just live out of fear. So in our everyday lives and in all of our work, there are still young women held captive by misogyny. There are still young women held captive by a racist, horrible government that seeks to continue to oppress and kill. The issues are really hardcore, but they're really real. So with that, thank you, Hampshire College, for allowing me to just talk about what we all are doing every day. And thank you for giving us, all over the country, young women like myself, the to continue to go on and fight for our freedom. Thank you.
The pressure.
pressure is overwhelming. Well, everyone who spoke is so wonderful. So, I will do my best. Last night at the speak out, I and some of the other women who have been hanging out with noted, among other things, the fact that young women seem to be confronting the same issues of access and quality of care as mediated by race and class in their experiences of abortion. For me, it resonates with the fact that I have taken to use the term imperialism again. I have long refused to use the word, believing that it has become an overused term that has lost its meaning. But there is no better term for the war happening in the world. It is an imperialist war. A reminder that imperialism has not fallen, as much as it was last night's speak out, that reminds me that patriarchy has not fallen. Abortion is a right, and like all individual rights, demands the existence of at least a liberal, democratic society. Perhaps the best social system that can be had from capitalism and patriarchy. But the best of capitalism and patriarchy can be given only to a privileged few. Many of us have never lived in democratic societies and communities, and therefore have never enjoyed abortion rights, the right to an education, the right to privacy, the right to health, the right to nutrition, the right to bodily and cultural integrity. I might also add, as the speak out showed last night, people who, because of historical accident, of being born to a certain class, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, body type, end up being lucky on this side of the dimensions are still present, because rights and liberties they enjoy can never be assured by an unjust social and economic system. In the last decade, we have seen the resurgence of militarisms and fundamentalisms. The machismo that justifies war also justifies rape, sexual harassment, and all other forms of violence in our intimate relationship and in our relationship to all other forms of life. As well, the resurgence of fundamentalism threatens all civil liberties and freedoms, including sexual and reproductive freedoms. These two terrors of militarism and fundamentalism are not incidentally related. They are products of the same. In this regard, we see the danger of separating issues because many nationalisms seek to return to old ways which have been removed from the pandemics. The rise of HIV, people living with HIV and AIDS, of the right of a woman named to demand life, and not just one of the rights of humanity, of the rights of transgender women, disabled people, of the right to sexual education, of the right to peace in Palestine, in Uganda, and of course, the right of our own communities. But the liberation of one, therefore, cannot come without the liberation of all of us. The peace that we seek in the world cannot happen unless we bring these resources to our own countries and our communities. I might also add that this morning I remember to end by talking about abortion. This is a bad thing. I didn't hear anyone talk about abortion. First of all, I go working with women who live in Japan. It is pretty fancy when deaf parties, the government, and anyone else thinks that the poor women are not concerned with the election. We are very concerned about that. And the reason why I came, despite the fact that I'm not considered the U.S. a rogue state, is because we always have the same impact
suffering soul. Because we are patient and wonderful and with our bodies to the pleasures that we desire for ourselves. I want to thank everyone for the matter of spirituality for me to be here and just no wasting time. Thank you.